Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
This podcast was brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan, and this week, we're talking about enchantments.
That's right, we're talking about the best enchantments in CEDH.
For CEDH specifically, we've talked about some other card types before. I think we went over, what did we go over, creatures?
That was our second podcast ever.
We went over some other card types, you know the rest of them if you're listening to this
like
podcast.
Like planeswalkers and lands.
Etc. This time we're going over enchantments. We all probably have a pretty good idea of what sits at the tippy top. But we're going to try to narrow down a top 10 roughly as we go here.
Exactly. There are 17 cards that we're going to talk about, so there's going to be a bunch of honorable mentions here too. But let's just start right away because we got to get through some of these cards.
How are we going, by color or alphabetical?
The list is sorted by the order that I thought of them.
I like this order. This is a good order.
So should I just go in this order? Because I was going to pluck them randomly.
Well, you tell me. Did you think of the best ones first? Because we should probably wait till at least like the middle before we talk about the best one.
I thought of the best one first, and then I went, well, if I go in order, I shouldn't just do the best one first. So I purposefully didn't think of the best one first and then put the best ones.
I trust your judgment in this situation, in which order you want to present them. In which way you think of them now is how we should
talk
about
them.
All
right, well, I'm going to do what I originally planned on and just pluck at them randomly from the list.
Pluck away.
Because I think that's fun.
Sounds good.
So the first card we're going to talk about is Food Chain.
Ah, nice. Yeah, this is a good choice.
This is a great card to start off with. Yeah, this is 2 and a green for an enchantment. I'm not going
to
say that.
We don't have to say what it does.
For the rest of the day. Oh, should we? We don't need to read the card?
Oh, I guess we should. Yeah, I guess
gonna
we should.
I was going to read the card just because I feel like that's podcast etiquette. That
yeah, you should read the card. You should. Yeah, read the card.
All right. You exile a creature you control to add X mana of any one color, where X is 1 plus the exiled creature's mana value. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. The second that I started to stumble over words, I regretted saying that we should read these.
Yeah. Not again.
So that was a Food Chain special that we got.
Yeah, combos with Missile Griffin, Eternal Scourge, and Squee. I really only see this seeing play in Atraxa, which actually is a commander that I do still see pop up in tournament results. Atraxa is still winning some games.
Yeah.
But for me, that's the only one that I've seen that actually uses Food Chain.
Well, on the tournament side, yeah. I will say on play days, I am 0 for 2 against a Tali now.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So after I took it apart, the deck only seems to be better.
That's fair. You should put it back together.
I'm honestly thinking about putting it back together.
Yeah.
Because it is such a fun deck and it still does some wildly cool things.
It still has access to broken stuff.
And most of the time that I was winning the game, at least, was with Food Chain anyway. Like, the dockside was always the backup combo, weirdly enough. Like, Food Chain is what lets you power out several more Atalis, whereas, like, dockside was just good at getting your initial Atali out, but there's a billion other cards that are good at helping you power out your original Atali that all you just need is like the one tutor in someone's deck to find Food Chain, and then you're just home free.
Yeah, it is. I think you kind of mentioned this, but it's nice that Food Chain just works well with your commander. Just like exiling your commander and making its mana plus one means that you can, for basically one more mana, just recast your commander, which is what you want to do with Atali.
Exactly. And a lot of times, like, you tapped a mana dork to cast Atali, and like now that's just two more free mana.
Food Chain's also good in like Rocco. That's a deck that I've thought about putting together that doesn't see quite a ton of play, but I still think is actually pretty good.
And Ukama in Kazur is a deck I've been thinking about recently just as like a fun deck to play because it's still like a great way to win with Food Chain and not have to worry about exiling a win condition.
Turbo Consult. You can just end the Dark Demonic Consultation, exile everything named Food Chain, whatever. As long as I hit the Food Chain, we're good to go. Normally because the commander is the win condition.
Yeah, exactly. So as long as you have a way to deal with Dranith Magistrate, you're good to go.
This is the best enchantment that we've talked about all day so far, I would say.
Yeah, what do we want to rate it? On our classic play-to-win ranking scale of 1 to 5.
5 being a CDH staple, it goes in every deck that it can. 4 being a good card in solid decks that are seeing high competitive play. 3 being, it's a card you can play, it's playable. 2 being, it sees fringe play, but not much more than that. 1 is, this is not a good card, but people can play it. And 0 is, this is a seal, a limited card. This is not good.
Yeah, exactly. For other formats.
I would rate this somewhere around a 3. This is a card you can play.
I would rate this around a 4 because it's like it defines a lot of decks and it's what makes a lot of commanders playable.
That's true. It is a, you know what? You're probably right. I'm going to bump mine up to a 3.9. It is a solid win condition and it is one of the better win conditions if you have access to those colors. It's just normally not a tier 1 win condition, but that would be a 5. This is, so I think it's just about... I think honestly, I changed my mind again. 4 is what it is.
Okay, I was gonna say we're starting off on a good 3.95 to start the show off.
That was more play to win. Keep it that. 3.95.
All right, it'll be a 3.95.
I'm gonna lock in a 3.9.
I think that makes sense because I feel like it also ebbs and flows in the meta too. Yeah. There's times where Food Chain decks are like really on top, like when Atraxa is one of the best things you can be doing in the format because it's so dirty and we want to be Displacer Kittening a huge commander with a great ETB ability. Like that's the time that Food Chain is like on top and Food Chain's like a 5 because then Tier 1 strategies are playing it and it's doing great. But I feel like that's not always the case. People for a long time in like what, 2023, 2022 were saying that it was just a bad thing to do. Like you just shouldn't be there.
The biggest issue is just terrible into Rhystic Study. Rhystic Study is like a hard stacks piece for it. And when that's like one of the best cards in the format, spoilers, that kind of stinks.
Yeah.
But we are also like biased in that we particularly love Food Chain because on paper it doesn't seem that good. And then when you play it, you go, all this deck does is just win the fucking game. That's all it is, right?
Well, that's all we're trying to do is win the game. And I feel like even a 3.95 is a pretty unbiased rating for this card, all things considered, because my bias rating, I was ready to give it a 5.
Yeah.
but I didn't. I gave it a 4.
Yeah.
And I think it's time to bring up the card that you already spoiled because you spoil it. So now
we got to talk about
it. Like Candyman and Beetlejuice and who else just appears when you say their name?
Something in the mirror. Mother Mary.
Mother Mary? That can't be right.
who do you turn off the lights and you say in the mirror when you're in camp? Bloody Mary. Bloody Mary. What did
that
I say?
That makes way more sense.
What did I say?
Mother Mary. I mean, it is the Christmas times.
Yeah, Rhystic Studies is the card. Rhystic Study?
Rhystic Study, yeah.
Rhystic Studies is the YouTube
singular
channel.
Rhystic Study.
The singular.
Oh, God, please don't put two in your deck. I actually I forgot to mention this in the video, but someone in the tournament who was on Xur against me, they got to Rhystic Study, and then they had Mirror Maid to copy their own Rhystic Study.
Wow.
And it was, oh, my God. That's part of the reason why Bowmaster got so huge. I regret not pointing that out in the episode last
that's
week.
That's fair. So. Yeah, Brandon had like an enormous Bowmaster token that won him the game.
And that's how he killed us with combat damage. Yeah so the two Rhystic Studies ended up being his downfall.
What does Rhystic Studies do?
Draws you a card if your opponent does not. I thought we weren't reading the card.
No, you said we are. We read Food Chain.
Oh,
we gotta read this
one. Then we regretted it. I didn't know if that was a joke
or not.
No, it's
for the podcast. We gotta fill the air time.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So this is a 2 and a blue. So that whenever an opponent
casts
a spell, you may draw a card unless that player pays one. I'm trying to skip over the word enchantment.
Oh, okay.
But I read what it does. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, you may draw a card unless that player pays one.
Innocuous. What this card should say is all spells cost one more to cast. That's what it should say.
But it doesn't.
That's how everyone should read it. But the fact that one person gets the option to not read it like that... Well, then I'm not going to read it like that because then you've gotten ahead and now I'm behind if I don't do something.
It starts to snowball then.
Yeah, and then at a certain point when one other player has missed their third land drop for 7 turns in a row and they finally draw Chromox and they're going to play it, you know what I mean? Like, and then it just snowballs very quickly. So it's kind of strange. Like, this card should not be very good, but it's arguably the best card in the format.
Well, it was made at a time when no one thought that you were going to be playing a 4-player game of Magic.
Yes, so which makes it much different. 4-player makes this card completely different.
Yeah. yeah, this was a trashy common way back in the day. But now this is something that, you know, has been a casual all-star for years and really a CEDH all-star the entirety of the format.
It's like a cycle like of other cards that do the same thing, Ristic, other stuff. And it's kind of a bummer. All the other ones are so terrible, not even close to anything
so
remotely
bad.
Playable.
Yeah, because like the other one that I think would be remotely playable would be the tutor.
Yeah.
Because it's two and a black so that you can demonic tutor, but
if anyone pays two mana or one mana,
it's two mana.
Two
mana, yeah.
Then you can't tutor.
Which is like, that's a free counter spell that's stapled onto your tutor for your opponents. That feels so bad.
But yeah, Ristic Study, I think it's the thing that's most often mulliganed to. It's the best source of card advantage that we have in the format. It ends up just being a consistent draw engine throughout the game. It's so powerful.
It's the best card to have when you're behind. It's amazing while you're ahead. It's great when you're on parity. It's like amazing in every single one of the quadrants that,
that's a good
that
point.
You need them to be in. And Ristic Study is a perfect 5 out of 5.
Perfect 5 out of 5. There's an argument that it's the strongest card in the format. Is that fair? Depending on how you define strongest.
Yeah,
but like
it does what the format wants to do the most and like allows you to get the resource the easiest that lets you win the game the most. Yeah. Like if you just have this in conjunction with mana, you can't lose.
Right. And this can find you mana.
This finds
it can find you
mana.
Anything, even mana.
Right. Yeah. So this should be looked at as a stacks piece.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with the multiplayer aspect, and sometimes you, for one player, that sacrifice of a card is worth it, and then for the other player, now that the sacrifice has been made, they can't fall behind, like we said before, so 5 out of 5, moving on.
Boom. All right, so Deafening Silence is our next card. This is 1 white, and this says each player can't cast more than 1 non-creature spell each turn.
I don't really love stacks pieces much anymore, but I think this is one of the better ones that we have.
This definitely had its time in the sun.
Yeah.
Like, there was a time when stacks was ruling the format. Just basically rule of law effects are so good at shutting down ad nauseum strategies and any of the decks that are trying to use Underworld Breach and cast really more than 1 non-creature spell a turn.
Yeah, and this one is just key because it's only 1 mana and you can play around it yourself. There's no more reason to play stacks pieces that affect you and your opponents equally. Don't do that anymore. We have so many options. You have to lean into the ones that you can easily exploit yourself, because otherwise, if you're slowing yourself down too, you're not doing anything. You have to be slowing your opponents down more than slowing you down. So in a creature heavy deck that you can play this and then follow it up with 2 mana dorks when everyone's very limited on their mana production, you're going to be in a much better situation.
Yeah, I think this could be a contender for that Rocco deck that you're thinking about
putting together
because this is like great at interacting with Underworld Breach decks that you don't have a great way of interacting with at instant speed. You just put this down and now you go, you just can't win right now.
Yeah, the only scary part about this one is that sometimes it can make it so that your opponents can't do extra things. Like if you have an opponent that's going through a creature combo and playing several creatures and your opponent uses their 1 counterspell and then can't follow it up with the second one because of Deafening Silence, but the other opponent is just like playing creatures to stop that, then that's a shitty situation. That doesn't come up a ton and you can communicate with your opponents maybe, but I still think overall it's one of the ones that it's going to help you more than it'll hurt you, I think.
Yeah, I think what it will also do more often is like lull players into a false sense of security that they can still go through their Thoracle Consult line through this, but then someone else still has that one piece of backup and now they can't protect their combo too. So that's just one example of a creature and a non-creature card combo that like Kinim Basalt Monolith could be the same thing, right? You just put them in a spot where now they can't protect what they're trying to do, and you can take advantage of that too.
That being said, this isn't like you can just toss this into your deck and like make it good. I don't think it's that powerful. I don't even know that it's like a 3, but in like if you're going to play in this stacking strategy, I think this is one of your first options.
I think so too, because it is one of the best effects that you could have.
Yeah.
Honestly, I do think it's at least a 3, I would
a
say.
A 3.
Because there's multiple decks that would want this. This
three
does see play in more
play
than
it.
One deck. Yeah,
3 is you could play it.
It's not fringe playable. That's for certain. Yeah. And there's, again, times in the meta where this is one of the strongest things that are in play. Like, how many times have you told me recently at locals that, like, you lost because of Deafening Silence?
Because when I'm playing Rog'Sai, it's like, it's the worst thing ever against Rog'Rak Silasrend, because number one, it's an enchantment, which is already kind of hard. I have to find, like, a permanent bounce spell. And number two, like, it affects the whole strategy. It's the whole thing I'm trying to do. But I still don't know that it's as good as Food Chain Heuristic Study. So I think,
I don't think it is. No.
Solid 3, I can agree with, though. It's
all
a 3.
Right. I'm down with putting it enchantment out of three for sure. So let's put it there. Cool. All right, let's talk about a black enchantment because we haven't done that yet.
Okay.
But it's not the one you're thinking about. It's Animate Dead.
No. Oh, yeah. It's not the one I was thinking about.
Yeah, so this is actually the only reanimator that I put on here because it's definitely better than Dance of the
Dead,
and that one's not going to be in the top 10.
Right.
And then it's also better than Necromancy.
Although it's close. That Flash is good.
The Flash is good. Being able to snipe something that someone else is trying to get.
Getting a Protean Hulk so that it sacrifices at the year end step.
Sometimes people put weird things in their graveyard with the intention of reanimating them, like Atalis and Hoarding Broodlords.
Yeah.
So there's definitely things you can snipe with that instant speed. But Animate Dead,
the better one.
I think it's the better one here.
First thing that I think of, it loops with World Gorger Dragon and that other white creature.
Oh, can I read this one?
Yeah, please do.
I'm going to read the Oracle text that says that it's a one in a black that says enchant creature card in a graveyard, and when Animate Dead enters, if it's on the battlefield, it loses enchant creature in a graveyard and gains enchant creature put onto the battlefield with Animate Dead. Return enchanted creature card to the battlefield under your control and attach Animate Dead to it. When Animate Dead leaves the battlefield, that creature's controller sacrifices it.
That sounds right.
That does sound right, but I'm not remembering when you can interact with Animate Dead now.
Oh. Because
this is all one ability that it has.
There is a moment when it's on the field and the creature that you're reanimating is still in the graveyard and you can destroy Animate Dead then and it will never reanimate the thing.
Because is that a trigger that it puts on the stack? Return enchanted creature card to the battlefield and your control attached to it. And then because the first part of it...
The return, that's that... Read it. Can you read it again?
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Because it's a when ability.
Yeah. It says
the
when.
When's way up above, way up at the top. And because it's all one big fucking paragraph, it's all part
it's
of the one
trigger.
So this is all one trigger that's going on the stack that's allowing it to have this ability.
After the Animate Dead resolves, once it's in play, there is another trigger that you as an opponent can respond to, removing the Animate Dead. And then the target for the Animate Dead, that which is already announced by now, will not happen. It won't even enter. It'll stay in the graveyard. It won't come back at all.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So you were talking about World Gorger Dragon originally.
Combos with World Gorger, which is not really a...
Don't do it.
Don't do that.
Why did you bring it up? You just put that idea in someone's
head. In someone's
head.
You could do it. Once upon a time, it was much closer to playable in CDH. Nowadays, I think it's kind of tough to play that one.
I think there's so many better ways to win the game in like red, black specifically that you don't need to go through that.
What's the choose a background white creature that does it?
Abdel Adrian
also, except you need mana rocks, not just lands. You specifically need something else to flicker with it.
Yeah, it's like you kind of merge the World Gorger Dragon combo with the Ice Isochron Scepter combo with Dramatic Reversal, right? Where you need like a Grim Monolith or an Arcane Cygnus. So you can do shit.
Realistically, I think the best thing that Animate Dead is actually just reanimate a Hoarding Broodlord. I think that's really just the best thing for it. The only thing that I really don't like about Reanimator in CDH, which is a bummer because Reanimator and Graveyard strategies are like my favorite strategies in other formats, but in CDH, we only have one Entomb. We have other things that look like Entomb, but they're 2 and 3 mana, and that's so much different than 1 mana because you need to be able to Entomb early. It's okay that your reanimation spell costs 2 because you do that on turn 2, but on turn 1, you want 1 mana Entombs, and they can't print more... 1 mana Entombs, right? So like,
well, they did. They printed Gamble.
Yes, very good. That's funny.
Overused joke. Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, in 60 card formats, you play 4 Entombs. 4 out of 60 is pretty good odds. In singleton, 1 out of 100 is pretty bad odds.
Yeah, so like you have to play other cards like Buried Alive,
which is still good.
I guess we have Unmarked Grave.
There are some, yeah, but they're just 2 and 3 mana. Lord. Which is more expensive
that's
than you
true.
Want it to
be. They're not 1 mana options.
Right.
Yeah. So honestly, I think Animate Dead's going to be pretty low on the list for me. I'm not going to lie.
So my gut, I like it. Is it worse than Deafening Silence?
Oh, it's worse than Deafening
Silence.
You think? I think if you're doing this, you are already at a disadvantage in the strategy that you're playing.
Yeah, that might be true.
Because it not only opens you up to counter spells, but it opens you up
removal.
To like...
So much removal.
There's not only so much removal, but there's also the graveyard interaction that people are packing in for Underworld Breach, which is already a tier 1 strategy. So the endurance that just like green decks are just happen to play, like they're going to be afraid of your Hoarding Broodlord line that you're going to go through, or like your Chatterfang line that you're going to go through, whatever it is.
Chatterfang?
Yeah, I got Chatterfang on the brain because I'm thinking about like Kenrith Reanimator and how I lost to it in the tournament. Okay. So like that was...
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I still think it's a 2.5 though.
Yeah, which is still worse than Deafening Silence.
Yeah, worse than... Yeah. I think I can agree with that.
This is way more on the lines of you could play it.
You could play it.
Like it's a phantasmal image, really.
Well, three is you could play it, right? I think that's what I said. Three is you could play it.
Well, okay. Well, then let me amend that.
Two is like it's you can in a fringe deck. It's all right.
That's what you said.
Two,
okay.
I think two is like in a fringe deck. It's okay. And then one is like.
Well, then I would give this a two.
You give it a two.
Remembering what the scale is, then I would give this a two.
Five is a CDH staple. Four is this is a really good card. Like this is a good card in like a chunk of decks. It's not a staple, but it's a good card in chunk of decks. Three is like you could play it. It's fine. It's good. You know what I mean? Certain decks will be fine. Two is, this is very fringe. This is good. It's fine in the fringe deck, but it's really very fringe. One is, we don't think this is very good at all. Zero is, this isn't in contention.
Yeah, this is way more a two for
you
me.
You think this
then.
Is a
yeah,
two?
Yeah,
okay.
I think this is closer to two.
I'm going
to
give it a 2.5 for my love of reanimation, and maybe one day, knowing that you're probably right, it is a two, but I will stand with my 2.5.
Well, I'm fine with the 2.25 than that it will end up getting, because this is something I probably would recommend this more than some other cards that you could play.
Yeah, there are worse cards.
There definitely are worse cards. Like, do you want to talk about a worse card?
Please.
Oh, God, what's a worse card?
Find one card worse than Animate Dead.
One card worse than Animate Dead. For $1. All right, Steel Enchantment.
Oh, yeah.
This is two blue so that you can enchant an enchantment. Oh, what a fucked up sentence. And then you control the enchanted enchantment.
Yeah.
This is great if you're playing a drinking game.
And someone named the word enchantment.
Yeah.
I put this one on here, and I don't know that it's really good, because I don't really see too many people playing it. But if we're in a Rhystic Study world, maybe this is close. I don't know, I feel like it's a card that I think about more and more.
This is a TEDH card that spikes tournaments in decks that you don't expect it to. Like, remember that Talion deck that won a tournament? And we were really excited about it. We went all into it. Like, we went over all the cool cards it was playing. This was one of them that it was on, and it seems really good in the Rhystic Study medis.
If you make it to the final four, where you're probably playing against like a Timnachrom and a Timnathrasios and some weird deck that you've never heard of, but it's playing blue, I feel like this card is great there.
I like it against Rhystic Studies,
Rhystic
like
studies,
specifically.
Yeah. But they just it needs to be specifically Rhystic Study. It's not quite as good against Mystic Remora because you still have to pay for it. It's still good. Like
the problem with Mystic Remora is good. Like, I already talk about how I don't like cards that are only good against like certain cards, right? And this is one that like this is really only good against that one card, which I guess, yes, people are mulliganing for and like they're actively trying to tutor for and like they really, really want it in play. So you will see Rhystic Study in play an absurdly larger amount than a lot of other cards in someone's 99. But I don't know. I feel like that's
too
still...
Too specific, too fringe.
Yeah,
you have to be in low color blue, and I think there it can be fine if you plan on drawing 1,000 cards, and sometimes this one's dead, but when it's good, it's insane. I think that's okay, so yeah. I wouldn't mind it in some like blue or two color blue decks.
If you're playing a tournament and you expect a lot of Rhystic Study, I think you should play it there. But I don't think that your casual pods, I wouldn't run it there.
What are you going to take, a Carpet of Flowers?
What are you going to take, a Carpet of Flowers? Yeah, and like you're going to keep opening hands that are going to make you feel confident because you have Steel Enchantment.
And then it's going to be the one game where they play the One Ring
Artifact Creature.
Ledger Shredder and nothing that you can take.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to give this card a 1.5 is what I would give it because like... I mean, technically, all these cards you could play. You could play them, right? Yeah. But, like, this one is so niche in particular that I think that I want so many other cards in my deck before I want this in.
I think I agree. It's just one that's kind of on my radar. But, yeah, I'm going to give it a 1.6.
All right. So, a 1.55 this card will get. I mean, the math's a lot easier when Tyler's not here. All right. Should we branch out?
Let's branch. Let's do some branching.
Let's get a little bit abstract.
Is it green
here.
Enchantment? Is that what was going
no,
on?
No, we're not going into green yet. I guess we already were in green. Food chain. We talked about food chain. We're going to talk about an abstract one here. This is Urza's Saga.
This is an enchantment.
This is an enchantment land. Yeah, it's a saga too. It's so many things. It's chapter one says that it gains the ability to tap for colorless mana. And chapter two gives it the ability for two colorless mana, or for two generic mana, to create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact creature you control. Henceforth will be called a Karnstruct,
yeah.
And then its third chapter says, search your library for an artifact card with mana cost 0 or 1 specifically. Put it on to the battlefield, then shuffle.
Urza Saga is such a cool card. I love cards like this that have a little tutor restriction on them because it allows you like build little, you know, things to find, little packages for it in your deck. I don't know that it always makes that good, but I just like doing that as a like a deck building pile, like Ranger Captain of Eos and Urza Saga, and having these little like things that can go, like Haywire Might. I love that Haywire Might can be found by both Urza Saga and Ranger Captain of Eos, and Haywire Might can get rid of the One Ring, which is pretty neat. The reality of Urza Saga is 3 and 4 and 5 color decks can only afford to play maybe 2 colorless lands, and Ancient Tomb and Emergent Zone are normally them.
I'm always way higher on those two, yeah.
So like playing a third one, you kind of have to be in 2 color or like low pips in a 3 color deck or something.
Yeah, I think some 3 color decks can get away with it because it can like fetch you other ways to make color mana, like your Chrome Mox or your Mox Opal and stuff like that. But ideally, it's getting you either like a Soul Ring just for more mana, because more mana is never bad. Or it's getting you like a Grafdigger's Cage, like another one of these toolbox cards that, again, like will depend on where the meta's at and what your deck is doing to figure out how good it's going to be.
I like this card a lot, but like I said, only in those specific decks. I think for me, it's around a 3, probably like a 3.2. I think it's better than Deafening Silence.
I think it's better than Deafening Silence. It's an all-star in Magda because it gets you Universal Automaton.
Which is like a tier 1 deck, Magda is.
Magda, I would say, is a tier 1 deck, yeah. So I would give it at least a 3.5. And what did you give it, a 3.2?
Yeah, what do we have around there right now?
It's just Deafening Silence at 3 and then Food Chain at 3.95.
Okay, it is closer to Food Chain, I would say. 3.5, I'll agree.
3.5?
3.5, right, yeah, I agree. You got
good.
Me.
I don't have to do any
math. Yeah, no math there.
Urza Saga, and we said 3.5?
Yeah, and it's strange. This is a card that, like, in some other formats is so much more powerful than it is in CDH because that Karnstruct, that really doesn't matter as much in this deck. It's really the tutor. I think that's the good part about it. It making the Karnstruct, like, can come up if you're playing a Staxier deck or whatever. If you're playing artifact-heavy strategies in Urza, you know, it can be fine. But overall, that tutor is what we're looking for with this card only. So I think without that, it brings it down to that 3.5.
Also, its dis-synergy with Blood Moon also makes it pretty...
Magus the Moon and Blood Moon, it just dies right away.
Yeah, exactly. State-based actions are a hell of a thing. Let's talk about the only red card on the list.
Okay.
Well, do you want to prove that you know what it is?
Underworld Breach?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. All right, so this is one in a red, then it says each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's mana cost plus 3 other cards from your graveyard. You may cast those cards from your graveyard for their escape cost. And then it says at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You don't normally get to the end set when you cast it.
I know, yeah. Normally, you just win the game instead.
Another 5 out of 5, another contender for best card in the format, I would say, right? It's up there with Rhystic Study.
It can't be a 5 out of 5 because we gave Rhystic Study a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I think it can be.
So how do we rank the two of them? Like, how are we going to say which one's better? Because we have to come 5. Up with a top 1. 10. You think this is...
I don't know. Well, is it a 4.9? I don't know. Is it better or worse than Rhystic Study?
I'm comfortable giving this a 4.9 repeating, I'm being honest.
You're probably right, because I think Yuriko is the only blue deck that doesn't play Rhystic Study, and that's probably wrong. Every other blue deck plays Rhystic Study.
Yuriko doesn't
play... There was a stretch where they didn't want to spend 3 mana sorcery on the Rhystic Study because all you want to do is Ninjutsu. I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah, I'm just going to put a bunch of bad cards in my deck to do this fun thing where I bounce creatures.
But besides that, I had never really seen another deck that doesn't play Rhystic Study on purpose. There are decks that don't play Underworld Breach that are
Magda,
red.
Magda, tier 1 deck that doesn't play Underworld Breach.
Bloodpod. There's like a ton of red decks actually that don't play Breach. Just Breach is like powerful. But
it's also like only the second best win condition in the format though too, right? Like Thassa's Oracle, I still rank higher than Underworld
Breach. You're right. Okay, yeah, you're right. All right, I'll give it a 4.9.
I'm going to give it a 4.8. Because I know what else is coming up on this list. And I think that there is something else that I want to save a 4.8, spot for.
4.85.
Underworld Breach is going to get a
4.85 for me.
2.5 then.
And then, I think
all together, yeah. We're figuring it out, everybody. We're doing this.
We're doing it.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Pick a color. Any color, except red. You can't pick red anymore.
Red. Shit. Green.
Green. Okay, yeah. Let's talk. Man, you are hung up on these green enchantments. You really want to talk about a green enchantment.
Well, if you don't want to talk about power balance, what else are we going to talk about?
I guess that's true. Yeah, all right. Let's talk about survival of the fittest then.
Oh, I found a new, rekindled love for this card recently.
Yes, yes. I'm excited to pick one up for myself for the first time, actually.
Very
now.
Nice, yeah.
Because this is one in a green for an enchantment that says for a green mana, you choose and discard a creature card, and you search your library for a creature card, reveal that card, and put it into your hand, then shuffle.
So in Timnitana, this is for a green and a generic. Discard any creature from your hand, so that we're at 3 total mana, to go find Devoted Druid, and then discard the Devoted Druid. So
no, what deck are you talking about? You said Timnitana.
Did I?
Yeah.
I'm stuck on Timnitana. Timnathrasios.
Timnathrasios, yeah. I was like, oh, I mean, this does do this in Timnitana.
Sorry. In Timnathrasios, when looking for infinite mana, 2 mana for the survival of the fittest, 1 green to discard a creature, find Devoted Druid. Discard the Devoted Druid to find Hazel's Brewmaster, another 4 mana to cast the Hazel's Brewmaster, and exile the Devoted Druid from your graveyard. 8 mana, plus with a creature in your hand, and you can make infinite green mana.
It's crusty how cool and good that line
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's pretty good, pretty easy to set up. I think that has driven the power of the card quite up recently. Before, the only one card combo that I was aware of was like a Kiki Jiki line, which is fine and good, and I love that line, which is probably why I said Timnitana earlier, because I'm used to winning
yeah,
with some other fittest in Timnitana.
Yeah, discarding your Kiki. No, what did you do for that?
You discard a creature to go find Karmic Guide. Wait.
Oh, eventually, right? You discard a creature.
Karmic Guide's last one.
Yeah, because you find
discard for
Felidar,
discard for Kiki Jiki, discard for Karmic Guide,
and
cast Karmic
cast
Guide.
Karmic.
That's like 11 mana. Or something ridiculous. This
That's
is 8
so
mana.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so many searches, too.
I think this card is good. Historically, powerful Magic card has done strong things since it's printed in every format that it's been in.
Oh, Christ. When this was in Standard, this thing was this was
right.
ungodly.
Wasn't like,
yeah.
I think Vengevine was in Standard at the same time. Is that true, or is that a different time?
Is that how it worked? Holy cow.
I think there was a time where Vengevine and this were available at the same time in a
maybe
format.
Maybe that
I'm just
was extended,
at this point. Yeah,
but
maybe.
I don't know.
I only usually play Survival of the Fittest if there is a combo with it. If it's just as a tutor, I don't know that it's that as great in CDH. Still powerful, but I really like it if it has that power to be a one card win condition, which in Timnathrasios it is. I think it's maybe not as good as Food Chain.
I definitely think it's not as good as Food Chain,
but it's close. 3.7.
So it also, whoa, geez. So it also has that was an overreaction to the thing you said. I'm sorry.
3.7 feels reasonable.
Yeah, because I mean, it does also have like the upside in those reanimator decks. Like this was a way that you could also get like your Razaketh into the graveyard. I'm not seeing that so much with Hoarding Broodlord, but this is definitely like something that you can use to help set up line.
The reason that it doesn't see as much play is because you would go find Loyal Retainers, which allows you to return a legendary. It's a creature that you can sacrifice to return a legendary card creature from your graveyard. Hoarding Broodlord is a non-legendary, so there's no creature that you can find that reanimates a non-legendary creature
for that cheap.
For that
at least,
cheap, there's
too.
Like a
yeah.
you could get a
Phyrexian Delver, like that thing's 5 mana
five
too.
Mana,
yeah,
but this one is 3 mana, so it's a little bit more feasible.
Yeah,
so I
that
think that's
makes
why,
a lot of
yeah.
sense. Okay, I think 3.7 is a little bit high because I think Urza Saga is better than this card. Like this does allow for setups, but it sees play in a lot less decks that are using it as a setup. I guess right now the best deck in the format I think is Timnathrasios, and it's seen play in the best deck in the format. Right. So I could understand that. Man, maybe I do undervalue the card. I think it's better than Deafening Silence. I'm going to give it a 3.2. 3.2 plus 3.7 equals divided by 2. Comes out to a 3.45.
Yeah, that's what I got to.
That was great. Oh, man, I had so much fun talking about that one. Why don't we talk about the next card then?
You got it.
Let's see if this one keeps up to the hype. This is Blind Obedience. Do you remember this card? This is one in a white. It has Extort, which means that whenever you, the player, cast a spell, you can pay a hybrid or Zav mana. And if you do, each opponent loses one life and you gain that much life. Artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter tapped.
Yeah.
It's so simple, but so good.
Yeah, quite a decent stacks piece, but the fact that it's also a win condition if you're going through loops that allow you to like recast things over and over while making millions of mana, and then you can use your Blind Obedience to actually finish people off.
That's so cool. I always forget about that too. Yeah.
I think that's, to me, like that's the only time I'm playing Blind Obedience. If I both am interested in the stacks effect because I want the game to slow down, and also my win condition is a flicker in and out, and it can be like another like part of the win condition, I like it a lot there.
I think the card's just good in general. Even without Dockside Extortionist, it just still shuts off so many win lines. Like, creatures are ever more prevalent right now, and being able to make them basically useless when they enter feels really, really good. Really good against the One Ring and helping to slow that down. It's just like having another Manglehorn. I feel like if you're interested in Manglehorn too, I feel like this is something else that I think you're interested in as well.
My opinions on this one is like, I just don't want to be doing this in CDH right now. I don't want to be like slowing my opponents down. It's just not an effect I'm after. So for that reason, I'll give it like a 2.8 because I still think it's worse than Deafening Silence.
Right now, I guess I think in general it always is worse than Deafening Silence. But I do think that I agree. Right now, it's not good. There's times it will be better in the meta than it is right now. But we're just not at one of those times. 2.8, I think, sounds
2.8
good.
2.8 it is.
All right, shall we talk about the next card?
Yes.
It is a Smothering Tide. This card is 3 in a white, and it says whenever an opponent draws a card, that player may pay 2. If that player doesn't, you create a treasure token.
This is the real way to answer Rhystic Study, not steal enchantment, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I feel like this is because this just hits so many more other things. This
just like players draws.
Drawing a card. That's what Rhystic Study does, and also what everything else does.
Exactly.
At a certain point, it becomes really difficult for your opponents to pay that 2 mana. 2 mana is so much, especially in the early game. Once they've started to pay, they're just going to keep on paying. In a lot of ways, I heard someone say that Smothering Tithe is omniscience in CDH. It's just, your stuff is free. infinite mana, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
If it sticks around enough.
Yeah, and especially like after a wheel, like it's a win condition with a wheel.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
It's better than Food Chain.
It's better than Food Chain, but I don't know that it sees play in like all decks that have access to it. I've been loving it in Thrasios Timna.
Because our commander has a mana sink in the command zone. That's like so much more helpful too.
Yeah, but Krom Timna, I don't know that they always play Smothering Tide.
No, I don't like it in those decks.
Yeah, so I still think it's a 4 though, because it's a good card that you're going to see play in a lot of high tier decks. So I think it's a solid 4.
Yeah, I agree, because that puts it better than Food Chain, slightly better than Food Chain.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. There's nothing that anyone can say or take that away from us. Necro Dominance is our next card.
Necro Dominance.
Oh, why is this one next? We should have done the other one first. This is 3 black, and it's a legendary enchantment. It says skip your draw step.
Dang, I don't know that I knew that it was a legendary enchantment.
Can't have 2 out.
Huh.
Why? I don't know.
Yes, it would do nothing even if you did have 2 out.
So this says skip your draw step. This is all downside so far. At the beginning of your end step, you may pay any amount of life. Just pick a number. If you do draw that many cards, your max hand size is 5. And if a card or token would be put into your graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead.
This one is the, in my opinion, strictly worse Necropotence.
We don't know what that card does yet because we haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah, that makes it difficult to talk about this one. Now
so
you're
this
right.
This card seems great. We can draw so many cards. Oh my God.
Big issues that I don't like about this one is it says draw any amount of cards, which for Orcish Bowmaster and Shieldry, that sucks. It doesn't care about Obnixilis though, which is nice because it's not instances of one, whereas Necrodominance is you're activating it for one. Necropotence is an activation for one, so that triggers Obnixilis, but I'd rather trigger Obnixilis than Orcish Bowmaster, if that makes sense. Right?
I would also rather trigger Obnixilis and Orcish Bowmaster Well, because you are using just your life totals. Yeah, exactly. Like, Bowmaster would cut your life total in half with Necropotence, basically. It cuts, or I should say, it cuts the amount of cards you can draw in half.
Yeah. With Necro Dominance, you can keep 7, which I find a lot of times with Necro.
With Necropotence,
why do I keep doing this? Oh my God. With Necropotence, you can keep 7, which I find a lot of times just like refilling up to 7 can be fine. You don't have to go for 20 each time. Necrodominance, that is much more difficult. With Necrodominance, anytime anything goes to the graveyard for any reason, it is exiled.
Yeah, you can't really play it with like Underworld Breach.
Whereas at least with Necropotence, you can still brain freeze yourself. Even though Lion's Eye Diamond is not so great, you can still brain freeze yourself. So it can still be good.
We're talking about Necropotence a lot. I should read this one too.
Yeah, talk about Necropotence. Yeah, guys,
this is also 3 black. That says skip your draw step, and when it says whenever you discard a card, exile that card from your graveyard, and you can pay 1 life to exile the top card of your library face down and put that card into your hand at the beginning of your next end step.
Yeah, so the cards are very similar, but Necropotence is just still miles better.
Is it better than Underworld Breach? Because like it's gotten a resurgence now that Valley Floodcaller and Board Upon the Wind were printed in the past year and year and a half.
There's a moment with both of these cards that in your end step you get to see all of them, and still in your end step before you go to discard, you can do stuff. So you can Final Fortune, you can Born Upon the Wind, you can try to win the game right there in the end step before you have to discard. Necrodominance, you have to get rid of it if you go through the breach lines, which we've already kind of talked about a little bit, which is just like an extra step. I don't think Necrodominance is even a 4, to be honest with you. I think it only sees play, in my opinion, in like Rogrex Silas.
Honestly, yeah. So I think it's going kind of like way down for me.
I think it's
like it's going below blind obedience, I think.
Not for me, it's not. Necrodominance, it's like a 2.9.
Oh, I was going to say a 2.5.
2.9 for me, because it's almost you could play it. I don't think you could play it. If you're going as fast as possible and you just want to draw 30, it doesn't matter you're going down to 5 because you plan on winning the end step. It's good there. It's just, it's more difficult. It makes a lot more steps. And just Necropotence is always going to be the one that you go tutor for. Necrodominance, you're only ever going to cast it if it's just in your hand. You're never going to go look for this.
Yeah, it feels really sad that way that you're never going to do that.
You're never going to go find this card ever because Potence is always going to be better,
Potence,
I think.
Potence is always just going to be way better.
Unless there's an Omnixilis out, I guess. I
guess, yeah. Well, it's going to get a 2.7 then after we round our answers together. Yeah, I think what you said is really it. Like, there's enough downside that most decks don't want 2 of these and that it just is going to end up shafting Necrodominance a ton. Whereas Necropotence, I think is, oh man, it's definitely better than Smothering Tithe.
Yep.
But I don't know if it's better than Underworld Breach. I would probably give Necrodominance a 4.8. I'm going to give it a 4.8 because Underworld Breach is a 4.825.
4.8. Yeah, that sounds about right. I will give it also a 4.8. Underworld Breach, you don't really have to work around as much. Necropotence, you still do have to do some working arounds to win the game. Breach is just a little bit easier to form into a win, although Necrodominance can just be a Rhystic Study. It can just draw you 7 cards every turn, which Underworld Breach can't. They're very, very close. And I like Necropotence as a card better than Underworld Breach. I just like the card more. Yeah. But power level wise, I kind of think Underworld Breach is more powerful.
It turns you into the arch enemy if you're using it as a Rhystic Study. Like everything starts to come at you. So it is like a Rhystic Study, but like with a downside.
With a doomsday clock on it.
Yeah, yeah,
everyone's definitely attacking you now.
Although we did see Jacob from Fiendish Duo on our channel recently use it as a Rhystic Study and just like
so good.
Unstoppable if you're playing so much advantage and so much interaction in your deck like that.
Tons of ways to block with the ninjas and stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah, and everything in Yuriko's free all the time too. Yes. So it doesn't even, you can tap out and still have,
yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right. Yeah. So let's give Necropotence a 4.8. That sounds really good. Now let's talk about another white card that also bends the rule a little bit. This is Eidolon of Rhetoric.
Ooh.
Because it's also a creature, but you can still besiege it, and that's the rule of the day. So this is 2 and a white for a creature spirit. It says each player can't cast more than 1 spell each turn, and it's a 1/4.
I think this is the 3rd best rule of law. I think you want Archon of Emyria before this and Deafening Silence before this.
And it's better than a rule of law because it's a creature. So like you can't counter it with
Fierce Negation. That's not a card.
Force of Negation.
Force of Negation or Fierce Guardianship.
Yeah.
Either one. I don't love Eidolon right now.
I don't love it either. I think it's, is it better than Steel Enchantment?
Probably, but just barely. What do we give Steel Enchantment?
A 1.55 is what it has.
1.6 for this for me.
All right. Yeah, it sounds good. All right. Yeah. Eidolon of Rhetoric gets a 1.6.
I don't want to play this card in any deck right now. Even the Staxy decks, I don't want to play this card right now.
If I'm playing a Stax deck, I want Deafening Silence, I want Archon of Emyria, and then that's it. I'm going to cap off at that.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Well, then let's get this last little cat out of the bag here, or this elephant in the room, whatever you want to call it. Mystic Remora. I guess it's a fish.
Oh, Mystic Remora.
This is a blue mana, and it has cumulative upkeep of one, which means at the beginning of your upkeep, you put an age counter on it and then sacrifice it unless you pay its upkeep cost for each age counter on it. And whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, you may draw a card unless that player pays four mana.
This is the second best one. We just got to cut. Right. It's a 4.9.
4.9.
Easy.
Yeah. Easy everything 4.9. That we said about Rhystic Study, this applies to, except it's something you can do on turn one, which is absolutely nutty.
The reason why it's worse is this one can be played around. The table can talk and say, like, hey, I can just, like, get away with land drops and creatures for now. We can wait this thing out. The upkeep costs are going to eventually have to have it go. But on the down's other side, one mana versus three is much cheaper. And then four mana versus one is impossible. No one can pay four mana. People can pay a Rhystic Study and just keep going. You know, I can, you know, hold back a little bit. With Mystic Remora, they may have to do absolute nothing at all. And that is much more difficult.
So I really like Mystic Remora. I think 4.9 is the perfect thing. And we've been kind of saving that spot for it because it's just kind of known. It's the best thing you can be doing in CEDH.
Best thing that you can be doing in CEDH. It's the best turn one play is either Mystic Remora or Rhystic Study. Another thing that I'll mention is Mental Misstep. That's the only other thing that for Mystic Remora, you have to watch out for Mental Misstep.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But that's you know what I mean? That's just like part of the metagame, part of what's going on.
Right, yeah. It's good to have something against Mystic Remora. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. All right, so we only have three more cards to talk about in here, so we're going to talk about Copy Artifact next. This is one in a blue. It says you may have Copy Artifact enter as a copy of any artifact on the battlefield, except it's an enchantment in addition to its other types.
Yeah, so this is another one that just, like, sometimes is just an extra mana rock. I used to see this card a lot more in the days of Isochron Scepter, right,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Because you would use it to copy Isochron Scepter so that you could put your actual win the game condition underneath it, and then that way, as you would continue to go through your Isochron Scepter loops, you could bounce an entire player's board with a Chain of Vapor. Not that. like a Cyclonic Rift.
Right,
or you could,
yeah,
like Assassin's Trophy every card off of their board. That's a better one.
That's a good one.
I used to like doing Noxious Revival so that way I could literally loop through my entire deck that way. But there's so many cool things it does, and it also just copies the One Ring right now, which just gives you more of a reason to want to play it.
Is it word in that? It's a clone, right?
It's a clone, it's, yeah.
So you'll get the cast trigger since you cast... Since you cast it, if you copy the One Ring?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So just like if you were to Phyrexian Metamorph, yep, the One Ring, it's the same thing there.
Yeah, so if also I think some weird things to think about are stuff like Esper Sentinel. Two mana Esper Sentinel is not the worst thing in the world.
That's true.
And even Sol Ring, like two mana Sol Ring is still fine. I think the issue is just there's so many good cards now that can be played over it. Realistically, I think it's only really as good as like... a Signet, an Arcane Signet. And Arcane Signet's better than this, right?
Yeah, you that's know? True. That's the problem.
It's just
that
not
that's
as consistent.
That's the floor. Well, I guess the floor is nothing.
The floor is
it's
nothing, unfortunately.
Nothing.
Which
yeah.
is, yeah, the same thing with like Steel Enchantment. We're like, yes, the ceiling is very high, but when this is nothing, I can't afford to draw nothing.
That's the thing. Yeah, and that's the problem. I can't play cards in my deck that are stone cold nothing at any point
right.
in the game.
There's just too many good cards. There's no reason to play bad cards.
But
is
it's
my thought.
Better than Steel Enchantment. Because there's more artifacts that it can copy that you want.
The Steel Enchantment, it could be like a meta pick. When like Rhystic Study is like lights out, like taking somebody else's and having your own, it can be so huge.
It's really good against that one player.
Copy,
yeah.
I feel like copy artifact is never incredible. Sometimes it's fine. Like copying the One Ring is fine. I don't know. Like it can be good. Somebody else already has the One Ring and they're drawing the cards before you do.
Yeah, and Steel Enchantment totally swings the pendulum in your favor as opposed to pretends like it's going to keep you up.
This one's got a higher floor. Or it can just, like, at worst be some Sol Ring Grim Monolith or whatever. That's fine. You know what I mean?
Wow, is Copy Artifact worse than Steel Enchantment?
I'm
going to
give Copy Artifact a 1.
Oh, God. I'm going to give it a 2, which is going to give it a 1.5, and that means it's worse than Steel Enchantment.
I think that's true. I think Steel Enchantment has just a high enough ceiling is more appealing. Higher ceiling.
All right, cool. Well, let's talk about Dress Down next.
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about that.
No, we haven't. So this is one in a blue. It has Flash, and when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. It says creatures lose all abilities, but at the end step, you sacrifice it.
I like this one specifically. If your way to win the game does not include creatures at all.
Yeah, like if you're trying to Underworld Breach, really.
With Brain Freeze or something, rather than ending on Thassa's Oracle, you just Brain Freeze your opponents out instead. If you're doing that, I think this is perfect because in your last opponent's end step, you can flash this in and then you can untap with this effect still in play and it won't get sacrificed until your end step, right?
Yeah, but that was great when, like, everyone was playing creatures that interact with the board. But now, like, even Thrasios Timna decks don't play Dranith Magistrate anymore.
Yeah, not as much, which is kind of crazy. It is still, like, a decent way to get out from under a Orcish Bowmaster or a
Opposition Agent, like a Winota player. I've heard that deck's coming back.
Yeah, I think it's a good... I compare it to Cyclonic Rift, and, like, it's a good answer to everything. The only issue is it's yours, too. So, like, in the past, that was more of an issue because it shut off your own Dockside. Now that doesn't matter as much in the decks I want to play it.
I guess Cyclonic Rift also shut off your own Dockside because you bounced all of their stuff.
It's kind
of
true.
And
you're right.
Now you can't win with your Dockside.
Yeah, you're right. But I think Dressdown is good. I don't see it as much anymore, though.
No, just because there aren't as many creatures out there that you want to completely wipe away. Like right now, a regular one mana bounce spell is way more efficient and way more necessary, I'll say. Yeah.
We've also gotten Into the Flood Maw, and between Into the Flood Maw, Chain of Vapor, and Snap that are all effectively 1-0 mana, all said and done. That's just so much cheaper than 2, which is like a huge difference. And
yeah.
Then you don't really go to like an extra effect of that.
Yeah, that's kind of the main thing, I think.
But I do think there are some decks that can play this card pretty well.
And
I
there's
think
times where it's going to be better than it is right now.
Yes. And I think it's still better than Deafening Silence, honestly.
I think so too. Is it better than Survival of the Fittest than Urza Saga?
Probably not.
I think we're
not
starting to get into that murky territory.
I would say it's probably not better than those two cards. 3.3 for me on this one.
All right. I was going to say a 3.2, so we will give Dressdown a 3.25. Okay. And then our final card then, Dylan. Do you have any idea what our final card is?
I don't think it's a black enchantment. I don't... Oh, it's like a left field, like one of those white tax cards. Is it... Is there a blue enchantment that I'm not thinking about?
I'll give you a hint. You never remember the name of this card.
Oh, no. I'm not going to remember the card they never remember.
I guess, yeah.
What is it?
Oh, I guess that this was a mean joke to play on you then. This is Touch the Spirit Realm.
Touch the Spirit Realm.
Yeah.
This is an enchantment, isn't it?
This is an enchantment. It's never
doesn't
played
really feel
as an
like
enchantment.
It. Yeah.
But yeah, it's 2W for an enchantment, and when it enters, you exile up to one target artifact or creature until it leaves the battlefield. But you can channel it from your hand for 1W to just discard it, and then exile target artifact or creature and return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step.
Yeah, that channel, that's the real thing. In the Rhystic Study world, you can have all the cards you want in your hand, but interacting with channels is difficult. You're not playing Stifle. You're not playing Weirdo Shit. I know that because we're playing CDH.
And then if you're playing those cards, your deck's at a downside.
Yeah,
so if you got me this game, I'll get you 90% of other games.
Exactly. So that channel is huge. And one thing that I also really like about this is the thing coming back. If I want to exile your Dranith Magistrate, I cast my commander, and the Dranith Magistrate comes back. That's great with me because now my commander's out and still fucking you guys up. Being like, you can get rid of it so you can win the game, or you can just like get rid of it temporarily so you can sidestep it. I think
or
it's fine.
You can protect your own thing that you need to come back to, like protect your own Kinnan, and then at
Plagon.
Someone else's turn, oh, your Plagon drives.
Oh,
the battlefield trigger comes
that's
back.
That's so good.
You make infinite mana on someone else's turn then when your commander comes back, right? Like, there's so many things that this allows you to do that helps protect you from the blowouts that permanent removal can.
Yep, I've been thinking a lot. This one I don't currently play it in my Timna Thrasios list, which is the deck that I've been looking at a lot. I think I'm going to. I don't really want to. I feel like I can cut Abrupt Decay, but I'm not sure. I want to cut something. The easiness to cast of this one is also super relevant.
Yeah.
Abrupt Decay being black and white when I'm looking at Tundra sucks sometimes. So.
I think the real crux of this is how much do you need answers to Underworld Breach? Because this cannot answer Underworld
That's
Breach.
True,
and
yeah.
I've been on the opposite side of that, where someone thinks they can stop my win, and then I go, touch the spirit realm.
Artifact or creature only, not enchantment.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you gotta watch out for that a little bit.
Though, when you cast it like for a 3 mana,
it's still artifact and enchantment.
Right?
Yeah, it's very, very much in that Kamigawa thing of we can hit the Kamigawa vehicles and shit.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like this card a lot. I think the channel is huge. I think it's worse than Urza Saga.
I think it's worse than Urza Saga, too. I mean, is it better than Dressdown at a 3.2.25? Because I feel like...
Yeah, it's better than Dressdown, I think. Uncounterable and does something very similar. Dressdown gets rid of all the creatures. temporarily.
Yeah, I think Dress Down's upside, its ceiling is higher.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's more uses for Touch the Spirit Realm. So I could see that. Is it better than Survival of the Fittest?
No.
All right, but it's not better than Urza Saga.
Where's Urza Saga?
3.5.
Where's Survival of the Fittest?
3.45.
It's worse than both of those cards.
Let's give it a 3.3.
That sounds great. I love a 3.3. It's not even going to be in the top 10 probably, right?
It is actually.
Okay,
yeah.
3.3 we'll give it.
3.3, okay.
I'm confident at the top of our list. I'm less confident as we go down. That's all kind of loose. Depends on the pilot. Depends on the deck. But I'm confident the top three are right.
Me too. Yeah, that was easy. Okay. So our top 10. Our number 10 is Dress Down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, there's not a lot of enchantments. So yeah. Most of them had a pretty easy time hitting the top 10.
Yeah.
Number 9 is Touch the Spirit Realm.
Okay.
Our number 8 card then is Survival of the Fittest. Our number 7 is Urza Saga, and then Food Chain came in at number 6.
Urza Saga is better than Survival of the Fittest?
Yeah, we decided that already, yeah.
Did you decide that?
I helped decide that, yes.
I don't know that
but
I
that's
agree
where
that
we
one.
Came
okay.
in with, yeah.
Okay.
Survival of the Fittest came in at 3.45.
Okay.
You gave it a 3.7.
Yeah, that's why I feel it's
I rated it lower than Touch the Spirit Realm, actually.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Urza Saga is a 3.5. Food Chain was a 3.39. That's our number 6.
3.93.
3.95
is what makes sense. Where did the 3 come from?
Well, yeah, the first number.
The first
three,
number,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Our number 5 is Smothering Tithe at 4. And then Necropotence is our number 4 card. That came in at a 4.8. Big gap there.
Big gap.
Yeah, big gap. Underworld Breach is our number 3. That was a 4.825. And then Mystic Remora was our number 2 at a 4.9, followed by Rhystic Study, the perfect card, 5 out of 5.
Flawless.
Flawless. Really,
that's perfect.
Honestly, I do really like this list. I think it's pretty good.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Spengler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Grumpy, Gecko21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornel Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Fools, Goto9, Quad J, Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our new merch, like our sleeves or our new shirt and pants designs, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use our affiliate link down below for code PLAYTOWIN5 for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Here they are. It's Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Dead, and then the target for the Animate Dead, which is already announced by now, will not happen. It won't even enter. It'll stay in the graveyard. It won't come back at all.
I might have to sneeze again in a second.
I hope you include the of me pausing perfectly for you to sneeze at that.
That was perfect. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Urza Saga is such a cool card.
Excuse me. What the hell?
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.